The Guardian.
Support for this podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand, or portfolio so easy, it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly Extra. Tough on football, tough on the causes of football. Today, League Cup highlights. Man City not Wednesday into next week. Well, hang on, this is last Thursday's show, listeners. Today, there's Champions League. PSG beating Barcelona. Liverpool is at the stationery department. We're going to need more envelopes. Elsewhere, there's Roma in Mancunia. King Totti. We salute the old man in his top bit of spooning as he prepares to face the old lady this weekend. There's Post and Arsenal. Gunners celebrate Arsenal's anniversary by showing him what it feels like to be a big team playing Arsenal. But what will happen when they take on league-leading, Wenger-baiting neighbours Chelsea this weekend? All that plus bants in this Football Weekly Extra. Bang, it's Football Weekly Extra and it's Philippe Auclair.
Bonjour.
TV's Philippe Auclair. Oui.
Oui, oui.
C'est vrai. Ian McIntosh. Hello.
Hello.
Hey. You do that so I'm Barry Glendening.
Do you quit?
I certainly do. And Raphael Honigstein, I think, is going to be along just as soon as his German efficientness can muster his way into the show. Oh, I mean, here he's on his way, listeners. He's on his way. While we're waiting for him, let's read a quick listener's post. This is Marcy Coyote addressing some of the key issues from Monday's show. And saying, I actually like the group stages of the Champions League because it's all single matches, none of that waiting in between the away goals rule. Fair enough. And because Michael Hamm was a little bit down on Champions League on Monday. And the other big controversy on Monday was breakfast. Marcy Coates says, you can't go wrong with eggs for breakfast. What's the latest thinking on eggs? Because I believe that an excess of eggs was meant to be a very dangerous thing.
No, it's not.
No?
No, I think it's all based on this myth that the yolk contains an awful lot of cholesterol.
Yeah, that's a myth.
But no, but there are different kinds of cholesterol. Yeah. And the cholesterol which settles in your arteries and is not the cholesterol you find in an egg yolk.
Right, what do you have?
So there's no relation. I actually had eggs this morning.
Right, there you go. Bingo.
Well, I noticed Kevin Davis is injured at the moment, Preston striker.
Pop-Tart eating Kevin Davis.
Yeah, but he's no longer eating Pop-Tarts because he posted on Twitter yesterday, he's been put on this diet.
Hmm.
I was surprised to see that muesli actually finished the feature.
But what kind of muesli? This was a key point made by several listeners, and thank you for this, is that you've got your muesli, your rolled oats and that kind of thing, and that's all fine. It's when you get your crunchy toasted mueslis, that's where the danger comes in, especially if they've got dried fruit in them. Anyway, I'll leave it there, listeners, because, you know, there are appropriate forums for this kind of thing, and this isn't it. This is a place where we're going to be talking about the big game Wednesday night at the Emirates, Arsenal's 4-1 win over Galatasaray. Philippe, you were there. Ian, you were there. Did you have a good time?
It was really good fun. It was there was a something for everyone.
Mm.
Good attacking from Arsenal, awful defending from Galatasaray, and a whole sack's worth of pyrotechnics in the Galatasaray end.
Yeah,
it was a very entertaining game. I honestly haven't seen a team in the Champions League defend as badly as Galatasaray since I think when Steaua Bucharest had 7 put past them at the Emirates a few years back.
Mm.
They were really almost heroically bad, particularly Philippe Melo.
Right, yeah. Michael J. Vokalos writes, pod question, are Arsenal as good as they seem in victory or as poor as they seem in defeats and draws? What do you think, Philippe?
Can I say both?
Mm. Mm.
Oh, somebody's just walked in.
Yeah. Raphael Honigstein, fresh
good
from...
Good morning.
Hi, Raph.
Hello.
Yeah. Anyway, we were just talking about Arsenal. Yeah, were you there last night?
I was there.
Oh, right, okay. Well, Philippe can finish his point, then perhaps you can chuck yours in. But anyway, you were saying...
Both.
Both, right.
No, they look terrific going forward with Ozil in his natural position, Sanchez and the Ox doing sterling work on the wings, and Danny Welbeck doing a very, very fine Thierry Henry impersonation. But this being said, what was in front of them was so pathetic. Actually, I should add to the great delight that we had last night, the near fight between Muslera and Felipe Melo after the third goal. They really were very close to coming to punches.
Right. But that's enough about the Turkish side. We're a North London-centric pod, this one. So let's talk about Danny Welbeck, only the third Arsenal player to score a hat-trick.
After Thierry Henry and, of course, Nicolas Bentner against Porto.
Which one is he, Philippe? I need an easy box to put him in.
He's Danny Welbeck.
Okay. All right.
I know, that was...
No, that's fair enough.
Yeah. And I thought it was very, very impressive the way he took his... Also, he's obviously a striker who learns quite a lot, because if you take his last goal, he's tried several times in this kind of situation, the little dink over the keeper, and has missed on a couple of occasions. He's tried to put it straight alongside the ground. It hasn't worked. And he's sorted out a new method, which was impeccably executed last night.
Right. Well, his scoring's always been the issue with Welbeck. So are we seeing the development of something new under Wenger then?
Well, possibly. I mean, it was even the issue to a certain extent in the first half, where he first took a shot from a ridiculous angle where he should have passed, and then had a fairly easy one which he tamely side-footed to the keeper. Right. And you're wondering if this same story is repeating itself. But then you could see how liberated he was once the first goal had let in. Also, I think you will find very few sides, even in Europe or in the Champions League, who'd be so accommodating when it comes to playing against Arsenal with no discernible back line and leaving about 60 metres of space to run into.
Chelsea, for example, you don't see them performing in the same manner on Sunday.
No, I don't. Right, I don't. Okay. And I have to say that for all the plaudits that Arsenal should rightly get for what was a great result in a very difficult situation for them in the league, I still think there are some fundamental issues with this team. The way they play collectively always seems to be hinging on individual moments of brilliance. And as soon as two or three people are not quite at the required level, the whole thing sort of falls down quite badly. And I still wish that there'd be more of a collective plan at work rather than just passing it around and hoping for things to happen, which seems to be the major plan.
Well, one thing which is sure is that you're not going to see Santi Cazorla in the same role against Chelsea on Sunday.
Against Matic.
Yes, that would be quite funny.
So he was a kind of defensive midfielder?
He was a holding, semi-holding midfielder alongside Mathieu Flamini, who was basically there to collect his customary yellow card.
And how did that work out?
Extremely well, because there was so much space to exploit. And therefore, if you've got somebody who is so good and with both feet, as Santi Cazorla is... That's wonderful. You know, he could feed, Alexis and the Ox, who had a very, very good game, I thought, again. Which makes me think, by the way, Theo Walcott might find it a little bit difficult to get back into that side when he's fit again.
Mm.
There's a lot of competition on that position.
Whenever that might be. Well, you know Arsene well, and it's a special week for him. Or maybe it isn't. Maybe he's not that bothered about it.
He's not bothered about that.
I bet he's bothered about going to play Chelsea, though, isn't he?
He will be now. When it comes to things like statistics and milestones, I mean, I remember for his, I think it was his 100th or 300th game in Europe, I can't remember. He hadn't kept any tabs on that. The 1,000th game in England, he doesn't care about such things, really.
He's not going to forget it, though, is he? I'm sure he remembers
it. It was a 6-0 that he had at Stamford Bridge.
He will remember that it was 6-0, but he won't remember it was the 1,000th.
Well, fair enough. What do you think is going to happen then at Stamford Bridge? Is it going to be another appalling mauling like last time out with the players that are missing?
No, I doubt it, actually.
No?
No, I doubt it. I think that defensively, I know they've come in for a lot of stick, Arsenal, but I think the current back four is actually quite a decent one. Lacks protection, certainly. But one thing they've got, though, this year, and perhaps they didn't have it in such abundance before, is really frightening speed
on
the
Arsenal?
Counter. Yes. Which... You know, Mourinho will obviously keep that in mind. And so I don't think Chelsea will expose themselves that much.
Right.
So you might have perhaps a more cagey beginning to the game that one might think.
Ian, you've got a hand up. Is it to mention the very special game this is going to be for one Cesc Fabregas?
It wasn't, actually. All right. It was just to say that I think Arsenal will get mauled unless they change their tactics specifically to avoid what happened in the last time when they had six rattled past them.
I can't remember. So what happened that time? What did they do?
It was just one of those incredible Arsenal performances where they start misplacing passes from the first minute. Mm. There's fullbacks getting caught out of position. There's acres of space. And you know that Mourinho's been watching the tapes, and you know that Mourinho's going to have a plan for all of this. If he goes out with a kind of laissez-faire, let Arsenal be Arsenal kind of strategy, I think Chelsea will win and win very comfortably. The big concern for me, not that I'm that concerned, I support Southend, not Arsenal, but if he plays Sanchez and Ozil, then there's two passengers in that team, defensively speaking. They're both players I really, really like, but I think against Chelsea, you have those two in the team, you're going to leave some space somewhere, and Chelsea are going to look to exploit it.
Right.
Well, I think Sanchez and Ozil are two different animals when it comes to playing without the ball, but I think Philippe is absolutely right. I mean, Arsenal tend to go very deep without the ball because they have no real concept of winning it high in the opposition pitch, unlike a lot of good teams in Europe, which becomes standard more or less. So they go deep, which means if they have fast players to counter-attack, that's actually how it works. And that's how it used to work back in the day when they were always at the dangerous, if you remember, at their most dangerous from an opposition corner. That was the quintessential Arsenal position to score a goal. Things have changed when you've got no real pace up front. When you've got Giroud up front, then you cannot play that way. So I think Arsenal, in many ways, are better equipped this time round. But still, they'll need to be a lot smarter, be a lot cuter. And I think it'll come down to the protection for the back four. Where unless Flamini kicks a lot of people, there isn't just isn't that much there.
Right. And Cesc Fabregas, tick that box for me, please.
I think because it's a Chelsea game at Stamford Bridge, I don't think it's actually going to be a big issue.
Okay.
He'll get some abuse, but after 5 minutes, you know, people will move on. There's other stuff to do.
The story about Chelsea midweek, I guess, was a lot to do with Diego Costa and whether he was going to play and last the whole 90 minutes. How much did he play of the game Sporting in Lisbon? I'm not calling them Sporting Lisbon, everyone calm down, but Sporting in Lisbon. Philippe?
I think he was subbed late in the game.
Okay. But he should say, sure. I mean, it looks as though that hamstring scare for now is just that.
Yeah, and there is a possibility as well that Mourinho might be making more of it.
No.
I know. I was the one who was brave enough to say it. I mean, he has started every league game.
Right, okay.
And quite a lot of, you know, played a lot of minutes in cup games as well. I suspect he's going to be all right.
All right.
And the thing was, as well, I mean, he got some very rough treatment in that game. And
the Sporting one in Lisbon.
Yeah, and it didn't look at all. Sporting Clube de Portugal.
Right.
He did
in Lisbon.
In Lisbon. And he didn't look like a player who was too bothered about his physical condition because all this... And he got some really, really tough tackles, really bad ones, actually.
Okay. Well, he lasted the whole game, I'm now informed by a police.
I'm terribly sorry.
You must have had your eye on the...
News just in.
News just in.
And he was terrific.
There we go. All right, well, that's super. If they lose, Arsenal will be 9 points behind, 9 points behind Chelsea. But anyway...
So will most people be, by the way.
I mean, most people aren't freshly beefed up from the summer. They're supposed to be challenging for top honours, aren't they?
Arsenal?
Yeah.
No, they're not.
All right. Maybe not. Anyway, that's enough of this part of the show, but we've got plenty more to discuss. Next up, it's Tuesday at the Etihad.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace. When you need to know what's in the news, you turn to The Guardian. When you want to create something newsworthy, you turn to Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to create your own professional website for your small business, online store, professional portfolio, or blog. Getting started takes only seconds. Just go to squarespace.com, and to support this podcast, use the offer code GUARDIAN to take 10% off.
Football Weekly Extra with James Richardson.
And now we get to talk about Man City Roma. Wow! I mean, it was only a 1-1 draw, but still, wow! Weren't Roma great, everybody?
They were really very good indeed. And it's still, I know it's been happening for long over a season now, but Jovinho, every time I see him play for Roma, it's a different Jovinho.
But he was actually the same. He was back to the English Jovinho.
The old Lille.
That's the same as Jovinho as we saw in Lille.
But, I mean, he made himself useful, but in terms of finishing of that, it was back to the Arsenal model, Gervinho, his decision-making, etc. But it was all about Totti and, you know, good Lord, he's 38. But I thought that overshadowed that what a modern and fresh and dynamic side this Roma are.
Missing five or six?
Four or five stars.
Five and a half, yeah.
I mean, starters. Nine players are injured. And, yeah.
It's really actually interesting to compare what's happening with Roma and Liverpool. Because you've got two clubs which last year were not in Europe, performed well over expectations. Two people saying, Brendan Rodgers, Rudy Garcia, up-and-coming managers. And you see what's happening in Liverpool and you compare to what's happening in Roma, where they've started the season in Serie A, not playing fantastically well, but getting the results, looking really well organised and absolutely superb in the Champions League. I wonder.
Both with talismanic 30-something club legends.
There you go.
Yeah.
38 years old. That was remarkable, wasn't it? It was great when he went through. I know Jahart slipped, but we all knew what was coming. And then I love that when you know what's coming and then it does actually happen.
It really wouldn't have mattered if Jahart hadn't slipped.
Good.
He
I'm
was
glad
still
you said
going
that.
To score.
Right. Good.
And the real reason it happened is because whoever operates the Manchester City Twitter account and whoever operates the Roma Twitter account were engaging in bants all afternoon. And Manchester City pointed out when they welcomed Roma to the Etihad, said, Francesco Totti has never scored in England before, has he?
Yeah.
So it was pretty obvious, you know, that kind of fate tempting was never going to end well.
There's a first time for everything or something like that.
Well, you'd have thought that'd be a pretty big lesson to not tempt fate with bants in tweets. But I saw a tweet, and I can only hope it was from a fake account, but a tweet from AS Roma's official account saying, thanks for the hospitality, Man City. Looking forward to welcoming you in the return leg. You've never won in Italy, have you?
Oof. I would say that's a zinger.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Well, okay, well, we'll see. We'll see. I was actually at the Etihad, and a lot of them were very upset. Well, not that many, because the place was half empty, but there were one or two sparsely kind of dotted around the very VIP area where I was sat, and they were all grumbling about the fact that Man City just basically never switched on in that game. And of course Yaya Touré was getting the brunt of the criticism. But interesting, two games down the Champions League, two shots.
I mean, it's been the story of Man City in the Champions League full stop. I've seen two games there, well, three actually, Champions League nights, and they were so flat, it was unreal. And you'd think these are huge games against top European opposition for a club that, you know, has been waiting for that for a long time, but nobody seems to be very interested.
Why do you think that is?
It's the Champions League games aren't included in season tickets, and so Manchester City fans are in a situation where they suddenly have to stump up.
Oh, right,
it's still quite a considerable amount of money for what is essentially, as you discussed on Monday, a bloated competition.
But surely the most prestigious European.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Sorry.
But on the pitch, what about the players? They don't have to pay extra to turn, do they? Perhaps
no,
they do.
But then the fans who have already paid and are in the ground, you know, why do they
not make any noise whatsoever? Yeah. Hmm.
There were some Manchester City fans on Twitter who were there saying that there is a really strange atmosphere about the competition. It doesn't engage them like the domestic competitions.
Well, the good news is that the next game against CSKA Moscow could be played behind closed doors, so that will be an atmosphere that they'll feel very much
I saw that game on Tuesday.
The CSKA Bayern one.
It was tough to watch.
Yeah, it was weird, no?
It's an interesting story, actually. 70 Bayern fans had already paid their travel expenses to go to that game before it was announced it was being played behind closed doors. So they asked UEFA, could they go in and watch it anyway? UEFA said no. So they hired the top floor of a nearby skyscraper and watched it from there. And if you go on Twitter, you can, there's photos, you know, overlooking the stadium. So that's where they watch it. Bayern Munich have since very kindly agreed to reimburse them for their rental of the room, and apparently, according to a post on, it was Michael Brunskill from the Football Supporters Federation brought this to my attention, the European Football Supporters Federation seemed to suggest that there was 300 fans actually in the ground, but they were invited by sponsors, so UEFA would rather pander to them than actual paying customers.
Wow.
Wow.
It so, comes as a huge surprise.
Yeah, it doesn't it just?
Wow. Can I just say one thing about Norwich City? I think you're a bit tough on City. And one thing which struck me in that game is the impact that James Milner had when he came on. And I thought he was absolutely terrific. And also, he was really trying to G up absolutely everybody. He was by far the most animated of all the Manchester City players when he came on. And also, Lampard nearly made a difference, which is really bizarre. There are not two players whom we thought, I mean, they wouldn't be in the starting 11 normally. But they were probably the two players who showed, well, put on the best show, I would say, of individually speaking, of that team on that evening, which is bizarre.
Sorry, Philippe, at what point do we stop making excuses for Manchester City's pitiful performances in Europe? As much as their fans... Sorry, excuse me.
If you say that, you depreciate the performance of AS Roma, which was terrific. And I won't stand for this.
Barry.
As much as their fans don't like being reminded of it, Sheikh Mansour has poured $1 billion more into the club since taking over.
The City of Manchester thanks you, Sheikh Mansour, as the banner reads at the Etihad.
Yeah. You know, the club themselves haven't that much experience in Europe, but their players have plenty. And they really should be doing better. They should be winning that tournament.
Yeah. Ludo Goretz have got no experience in Europe, but look what they're doing. The plucky Romanians.
I think it's the whole City thing in Europe.
Bulgarians. And the comment spots,
I mean,
Bills.
The explanation usually trotted out for City's less than inspiring performances or results, rather, is the formation and tactics of Pellegrini, which is difficult, I think, in Europe to pull off with two proper strikers. Mm. He has switched around a little bit. He's played with Silva off a striker, I think, in Munich a couple of weeks ago, and they look better. But there seems to be something that's very, very hard to pinpoint, something intangible. I don't know if it's a lack of a kind of a collective togetherness that other teams who are more successful in Europe, English teams especially, have had over the years. City don't seem to have it. They have company, but he's at the back. He doesn't quite influence the game in a positive way throughout the game. And then there's Touré, and then there's no one really else. And this is something I think that for all the money in the world is very, very hard to create. If you haven't got City players who've been there for 10, 15 years, who maybe have a different attitude to what it means to playing for City in this competition, the others just, I mean, it's a bit reactionary to say, but the others doesn't seem to be that bothered.
Interesting.
At times.
They lack a totty.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Don't we all?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Roma are going to be playing Juventus this Sunday, 5 o'clock UK time. Pow! Juve, of course, got beaten 1-0 by Atletico Madrid.
That was ugly, wasn't it?
It wasn't great to watch.
Disgusting.
I liked the kit.
You didn't
like their lime green ensemble? Ugh. I thought they handled it with a certain panache. But
Ninja
sadly,
mutant turtles. They look like.
Yeah. But anyway, it was a 1-0 win for Atletico Madrid. The Italian press quite upset about the fact that they were picchiando, that they were a bit physical, Simeone's side, remarkably enough. But
that comes as a complete surprise again.
Yeah, the fact is, Juve didn't have a single shot on target in the entire game. So, anyway, that's coming up on 5 o'clock on Sunday, Rafa, just before us on BT Sport 1. But meanwhile, City, on some day or other over the weekend, consults notes. Oh, on Saturday. It's a late show on Saturday. They'll be going to Aston Villa. Huh. Villa beat them in this fixture. You remember Joe Hart? And I think he got dropped afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
The Weimann goal. There was a punt upfield. And
Villa had something like 6% of possession in the entire game. And that was the winning goal.
Yeah, that's right. But of course, this is the new Villa.
Yes.
Roy Keane was at the Etihad with his cohort, Paul Lambert, actually on Tuesday, looking very scary. It was kind of an exclusion zone, just a kind of force field around them. Nobody dared go up.
There was a glorious picture of Mourinho going to touch Roy Keane
on the shoulder. That was his "I'm off" because basically we won this game probably before it even kicked off. I've got other things to do, but well done, chum. Tap on the shoulder, which he tried to do to Roy Keane. But what happened next? Because I've only seen a still.
I've only seen the picture. I can only imagine that Mourinho just felt
Keane just ignored him. First, he shook hands with Lambert. Lambert then got very animated, pointing to his watch, saying, "What you're on about?" And then Keane just didn't look at him at all.
Right. There you go, eh? Anyway, Villa City? Is that gonna be where City come a cropper again?
No, why should they?
Because Villa have been much better this year, and now that they're over their bug...
Not of late. Villa, unfortunately.
Well, they had that bug, didn't they? You had the bug as well, didn't you, Philippe?
Yes, I did.
Oh, okay. But look how you're back and bouncing now. Villa are going to be the same, perhaps.
Really?
They might have Benteke back.
But, I mean, you're saying Villa are much better than last season, but that the bar was pretty low.
Well, yeah, I know. But put it this way, Barry. If they win this game, they'll be above Man City in the table. That's how much better they've been. Absolutely. Nobody's going to call this. I am.
Go on.
2-2 draw.
Ooh. No, I'll call City win. Villa have been humped 3-0 in their last two games.
Yeah. And that's why it's a brave call that I'm making.
It is. It's bold.
Did you say bold. Humped?
Humped.
Yep.
And not tenderly either.
Dry humped.
With no great affection. Mechanical and loveless.
That's lovely. Okay, well, Basel-Liverpool's up next on my big list O topics. Basel-Liverpool. Basel, now I can't remember if this stat is before the game. Is it 7 games against English teams they're unbeaten and they've won each of the last 5? Is that right, Basel?
Before beating Liverpool, they'd beaten Chelsea, Manchester United and Tottenham.
Okay, so it's 4. But still, they're terrific, aren't they, Basel? Once again, terrific. Anyone see this game?
Weirdly, yeah. Liverpool were very, very poor. Incredibly poor, even by their own... less than stellar recent standards. You know, they haven't been going well of late. Brendan Rodgers being hailed as a genius last season up until the very end of the season and seems to be getting it all wrong at the moment.
He's taken this team as far as he can. He must go now. That's very much the message from the fans.
Really?
Yeah, they're tweeting this and ringing phone-in shows and saying, Rodgers out.
Surely empty vessels making noise there.
Probably, yeah. Probably,
surely.
Yeah.
I mean, it's his third Liverpool team in as many years. The first one was all about possession to death. Goals were overrated. They didn't create much. Second one was thrilling counter-attacking football. Everyone was caught out time and time again. This time, you cannot play the football. Sturridge is a huge miss. We should give him that as well. And growing pains. New players. The whole static of the team has changed with Balotelli being there. I think also... he affects the way that his teammates play off him, and not always in a positive way. And they're beginning to see just how difficult it is. Last year they benefited from no Champions League, and this year it's been clearly proved detrimental to their
chances. The other thing as well, because you know, you have to talk about the defensive problems of Liverpool and the problems with Sacco and Lovren, reminding people of the Lovren we saw in Ligue 1 rather than the one we saw in Southampton. Schürtel being what the Schürtel, but I think actually they've actually bought on the flanks Manquillo and Montero. Moreno. But and you look at this, just this is just not happening. So nothing's happening yet.
Is it the case that Rodgers, for all his tactical acumen, yes or no, is just really bad at buying players? Because the only person he's brought in with any success was Sturridge, and everyone else has been a bit of a bust, isn't it?
But then Rodgers isn't alone buying the players, right, as the three-man transfer panel above. So it's a possibility that they're trying to build a horse by committee and ending up with a camel. But I think...
I hate it when that happens.
You're obsessed with humps today, aren't you?
But you have two major problems. One that Rafa alluded to, which is it's not a computer game. You can't just pull out one player and stick in another one. They all have relationships to each other in the way that they play, and there are so many new players, this isn't going to happen immediately.
Right.
And secondly, that Suarez, they're not just missing him on a technical level, they're missing him on a mental level. Mm. He was, for all of his mental. many faults, he was mental. For all of his many faults, he played every minute as if it was the last minute of the cup final.
Right.
And when you've got someone like that up ahead of you, leading by example, no one else has got any excuse. He's the best player on the pitch and he's working the hardest on the pitch. Mm. And without that and the latter stages of games they might otherwise turn around, they're tending to hit a brick wall.
You just have to see. I mean, what I saw of the game against Basel, they really did a job on Steven Gerrard as well. And they prevented him from having, you know, any space, any time on the ball, and that creates a big problem because he's supposedly the deep lying playmaker, and when he's, you know, when the supply is poor to start with to him, and then when he hasn't got the time to spray those passes, well, the whole game falls apart. They're missing Joe Allen as well.
Yeah,
You know, who was an important player for them last year?
It was remarkable.
Really? How much did he play last year?
I'm not saying that he played an awful lot. I'm saying that he fitted very well in the team. When right. I saw him, I thought it was excellent.
Okay.
I think to have three guys there, with Gerrard being one of them, is very different to having Gerrard plus another.
Yeah.
As England have found out as well at the World Cup. But the thing with Gerrard is that we all knew that this was going to come because it's been working in the Premier League this season. Whenever teams have man-marked him, Liverpool's distribution broke down at the very start. And I thought it was remarkable to hear Rodgers actually after the Everton game coming out and saying, yes, we've done some special exercises with Stevie in training so he can find space and go and collect the ball. I mean, you wonder, you know, did Gerrard enjoy hearing that? I mean, I cannot imagine Mourinho or somebody like that talking about one of his big players in that way.
It's like when he said that he taught Balotelli how to defend at corners.
Yeah,
did this?
Yeah, no. He said that Balotelli had never marked before.
It's a pity he can't teach any of his defenders to defend the corner.
But it's a typical Rogerism, Rogerism. Mm.
Yeah, is that if it's incredibly clever or really stupid?
All the time.
Such a fine line.
And he always makes sure when he talks after a game that you're absolutely clear about what his plan was.
Mm.
As in, we did this and we prepared with a 4-4-2 diamond, we switched to and so forth. And you think, why is he doing this? There's no need for him to do that. Absolutely none.
I think he just loves talking about football. I've been at press conferences with Brendan Rodgers where the press officers have been trying to drag him away because he won't stop talking. Mm. I just think he likes it.
Oh, okay.
This said, people are already falling on his back at the moment, which is ridiculous. He really grew as a manager last season when people thought he was very dogmatic, and I thought he was really dogmatic. And actually, he evolved through the season. He really tried. He had some very interesting ideas, put them in practice, and managed extremely well with those. So, you know, steady on, guys.
But at the moment they seem a little bit lost.
Yeah.
Not quite sure where they're going. This is a new, as I said, this is the third Liverpool I think he's creating. But with Balotelli, as soon as he plays, that dictates then, or it has a lot of knock-on effects which really limit you in the way you can play. And I think the point about Suarez being so aggressive and being the first guy to really hassle the opposition deep and on half, you know, Balotelli is not going to do that.
3 o'clock on Saturday, they host the Baggies. The Baggies, who are hot from their 4-0 demolition of Burnley at the weekend. And, of course, the week before that, they went and won at White Hart Lane, who are a little bit like Liverpool plus 1 year, aren't they, Spurs, I like to think. So they've won. Also, have this for a stat. They've won on two of their last three visits to Anfield, have West Brom. What's going to happen this weekend?
Liverpool win.
Okay. Yeah?
Yes. All right. Nods around the table.
Sturridge still out. Defence still in?
I think
coming back from a away European game.
Yeah.
West Brom to take the lead, probably through Berahino, given that he's scoring all the goals.
Yeah.
And then Liverpool to come back into it when all of their luck suddenly appears.
Oh, really?
Balls flying in off people's bottoms, that kind of thing. Cathartic 2-1.
Didn't Rodgers use the amount of travelling they have to do in the Champions League as an excuse for a defeat after their first game, which was at home? So the fact that they actually had to leave the country to play this game could really affect them. So I'll go for a West Brom win.
Oh, all right, have that. They're up in 10th place, West Brom. 3 straight wins. One of those was in the cup. Wow. Elsewhere in the Champions League, well, of course, in that same group, you had Ludogorets giving a mighty scare to Real Madrid. I didn't see it, but we were all, you know, quite startled by some of the scorelines coming through there from whatever the name of their stadium is. And elsewhere, Barcelona lost at PSG 3-2. My word, so many big talking points here. One of which was all those shots of Jay-Z and David Beckham sitting next to each other. What on earth did they talk about? I spent the entire game trying to work out what were they talking about.
I reckon Jay-Z was saying to David Beckham, I listened to Football Weekly the other day, and that E. McIntosh still doesn't know who I am.
I'm going to be on my team, Stone.
Yep.
Poor Lothar Matthäus, he sat behind him and no one had him in the picture.
Who was that?
Always out of frame.
Oh. Who?
Lothar Matthäus.
Oh.
Nobody was interested.
Patrick Kluivert was there too, just in front of David Beckham.
Yeah, there was a shaking hands moment with him and Cannavaro and Becks. But it was all about Becks and
that's quite a handsome lineup, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
apart from Lothar Matthäus. I mean,
it was major star power there at the Parc des Princes, and the team didn't let them down in what, you know, just to set the scene, was described as an absolutely crucial match for Laurent Blanc after his dismal start to the season. Does this fit the notion that PSG just can't be arsed with Ligue 1, and it's only when
entirely agree with that, yes. They certainly the impression they gave against Toulouse in their last game.
Right.
They also drew against Evian, they drew against Reims. Honestly, this is
because this was without Ibra.
This is without Ibra, this is without Levitsi, and this is without Thiago Silva.
Right. One
thing so, it might be worth, I mean, they've got the money. PSG could probably buy two teams, and they could have their Champions League squad keeping themselves fresh in the French Cup.
Mm-hmm.
And then they could have a team of, you know,
I wouldn't
firm
say that's what's happening, but I wouldn't say that's what's happening. But I wouldn't be surprised if that happened.
Right.
As a matter of fact,
well, as victories about. Go, the French press, you can see there, they keep going crazy about it. They put it in their top ten European French games ever.
Yeah, that's. I mean, that is utter rubbish. It's hyperbolic, tosh and nonsense.
Again, I would argue the bar is low.
Yeah. Well, that's not true.
To put that,
you know, you've got Saint-Etienne back in the 70s, you've got Marseille winning the...
They talk about the games which have really struck, you know, which have really kept in memory. And, and the final against between Saint-Etienne, Munich and Bayern is not even in there in their list of 10. I mean, that's pathetic. No, but as games which have marked the history of French football, it's one of the biggest one. Auxerre's win against Arsenal is not in there.
Right.
But it's nonsense. I mean... It's Paris. It's complete excess. And on the other hand, they really, in French we say they bluffed everybody. Ils nous ont bluffé. Nobody was expecting it.
No.
Well, nobody was expecting Barcelona to be that bad either.
Laurent Blanc himself didn't seem to expect it because he kept on shaking his head.
The reaction to the second goal is unbelievable.
Thinking, what's going on here?
Yeah. Barcelona hadn't conceded a single goal all season, but they conceded that one. We must send alarm bells ringing around the Catalan capital with what's-his-face? Verratti, who's only tiny.
Mm-hmm.
No, which was the headed one? That was Marquinhos, wasn't it?
No, there's Verratti. Verratti. First goal is David Luiz, which is absolutely crazy. He's given space in the box on a free kick. You wonder, well, what kind of defending is that? Yeah. The second, Ter Stegen completely loses all sense of where he should be. Rushes for the ball, misses out by a distance. Verratti is at the far post. Whoops, lobs it over the keeper. It's just insane. And even the goal by Blaise Matuidi, which is a very fine goal and good finish by an excellent player who finally looked as if he could be asked to do something on the pitch. And when he does, he's terrific. Even that, you look at the placement of the Barcelona defense, it's simply not there. I was really surprised because I had been told that this Barca team had this season that scored 17, conceded none. They were, again, playing the kind of high-tempo, pressing football that was their hallmark and which they had lost a bit. And I saw none of that in Paris, where you had a lot of space for the Parisian midfield, which surprised me.
That first equaliser was... the first goal that they scored, the Messi one,
that was fantastic.
That was great, wasn't it? Worth noting, perhaps, that Barcelona, though, for all that they are Barcelona, have lost now 5 of their last 9 away games in the Champions League. Of course, at Ajax and Celtic in the past, without, say, those clubs going on and necessarily doing anything in the tournament. So we'll see. PSG, meantime, have Monaco this Monday. Sunday night, straight after that. Boy, that's quite a Sunday lineup then, isn't it? So you've got, what, Juve, Roma, and then a little space for all the goals and stories around Europe, and then, bang, PSG in action against Monaco.
If only there was one place I could watch all of this football.
Ian, prepare to marvel when I tell you.
If you see Monaco's game against Zenit yesterday, they would be the last team you'd want to watch on Sunday.
Monaco are awful.
Right.
They are god-awful. Yeah. I know that result in St. Petersburg is remarkable, full stop, but they were completely eviscerated by Leverkusen in the first game and should have been trailing by 3 goals at half-time. We're very lucky, 1-1-0. Jardim is... many of the players there actually want out. The club is going absolutely nowhere.
All right.
From that, it's all fine.
All right, well, we'll move on, though, because there's so much to talk about. You've got Atleti Juve. We talked about that already. Good week for German sides, Rafa. It was just Schalke who dropped points.
Yeah, Schalke, of course, after a great win in the derby, they go on and draw against Maribor, which is so symptomatic of the Jens Keller reign.
Right.
He always wins enough big games to stay in the job, but then doesn't win enough smaller games to really get anywhere.
He's Arsene Wenger, isn't he, basically?
No, I wouldn't. No. He's not Arsene Wenger.
Bayer beat Benfica 3-1. Dortmund beat Anderlecht. Yeah.
Well, Dortmund were only 12th in the league, so they really needed a result. There were some question marks about Klopp. Is his tactics too risky, the pressing, etc., blah, blah, blah. And they won 3-0 at Anderlecht and now have a bit more peace and quiet in which to work with.
Right, super. Jürgen Klopp, eh? He's quite a character, isn't he? There was that great YouTube question and answer that's been doing the rounds. A little bit of sauciness in there as well. Barry, what about Iceland? What news from there?
Well, the Icelandic top flight concludes on Saturday evening.
Really?
And by a quirk of the fixture generator, the top two teams play each other.
No. How many teams are there?
12.
Oh, right, okay.
And the top two are both unbeaten going into the last day of the season. So, with apologies to our Icelandic brethren, Hafnar Fjordur, who are called FH for short, they take on Stjarnan.
Let's go with acronyms, I think.
Yeah, FH take on Stjarnan. So, FH are kind of the Manchester United of Icelandic football. Stjarnan, you will know from various YouTube clips of their choreographed goal celebrations. So, FH lead the league by 2 points. And so, if they draw, they'll win the league, and Stjarnan will lose despite not having lost a game all season.
Right. Well, it happens. Perugia did that in Italy ages ago, but there'll be much huffing and puffing then in that game on Saturday, etc. and so on. Barry, can you also tell us about Fulham?
Well, they won again. They beat
Bolton.
Hapless Bolton 4-0 at Craven Cottage last night.
4-0?
4-0. And Ross McCormack didn't score, so.
It's the groundwork that Felix Magath has laid.
Well, that's exactly it. I tweeted last night that Felix Magath is probably watching that going, I told you. Yep. I told you my tactics would work.
Three wins out of four for the kit man.
Yep. He's probably in pole position to get the job, but apparently there's a five-man committee who will decide who gets appointed. So I suspect there's a chance he might not get it, which I think would be a ludicrous decision.
Ian.
Well, just a point on Bolton. There was a point about 5 years ago, I think, where Phil Gartside suggested Premier League One and Premier League Two, which would be no relegation. It would essentially pull the ladder up on two-thirds of the Football League and consign them to a lifetime of drudgery and darkness. One of those teams was Southend United. It was a ridiculous plan, and the Premier League said no to it. But Bolton are now in the relegation zone in the Championship, so I'm going to give it about 9 months, and then I think we call Gartside and we say, come on then, let's do it, let's do the plan, let's pull the ladder up, Phil.
Yeah, be careful what you wish for, eh? Yeah.
I think the Germans have got a word for this kind of enjoyment you're deriving from this.
Yes, right. Speaking of Germany and their knowledge, here's Abby27. Regarding the whole cheese business there at Craven Cottage, Abby27 says, we know about Italy and their woolen vests. Can Rafa Honigstein tell us if the cheese and wine really is a thing in Germany? Isn't
Clark?
There a special cheese?
Clark.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a sort of a
special
soft
cheese.
Soft, cottagey type thing.
All right. What do you do with it? You rub it into the affected area?
It's supposed to have disinfecting and, how do you say, against inflammation?
Anti-inflammatory.
Anti-inflammatory.
All right. And apparently it was that he wanted.
Yes.
All right. So it's not completely, you know.
Quackers.
Let me. Absolutely.
How many headlines used cottage cheese?
I don't know. Did they not? Because that was
Craven cottage cheese.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Must have been used, mustn't it?
Well, I don't think so.
The really funny thing about all of this is that Felix Magath is absolutely convinced that he'll still get another job in England. He's just waiting for the phone to ring.
All right.
If it had worked, would physios be running on now and pulling out spray cans full of cheesy string?
Cheese whiz. Yeah. Producer Ben suggesting a trolley with a cheese board on it. The various. In 5 years' time, we could be looking back and laughing at the fact that we were laughing about this. Just wait for medical science to catch up with Magath. Philippe, a question for you. Can Marseille mount a serious title challenge, or will they crash and burn like other BL societies? Marseille, I can tell you, are 5 points clear of PSG.
Absolutely. 19 points. Yeah, absolutely. They were my prediction at the beginning of the season.
In your head.
A league in which you excluded PSG, who will win the title? Marseille will come second.
Okay. Elsewhere in the post bag, a couple of little bits of corrections. We talked about Britsommer. We remember we were asking about things that are called the English this or the English that abroad, and the English Woche. This all came from that, didn't it? Big a midweek round of games in Germany.
Like French letters, for example.
Which is
like capote anglaise in French.
And I understand from the postbag that if I want my steak rare in Germany, I ask for it done English style. Is that right? Mm-hmm. Okay. But we said that Britsommar in Swedish was because it's called a British summer if you have a late, like what we would call an Indian summer in England. But apparently that's actually because it's St. Bridget of Sweden. Says JW. Oh, and also we said that somebody told us that getting a bikini wax was doing in English, yeah, in Spain. But Maxi Kiosko says it's not known as getting your English done. The previous poster has confused the words inglés, English, and ingle, groin in a thigh. Can you read this out in the section for linguistics pedants? There you go.
And you've also got filer à l'anglaise.
What's that? Oh, that's the one that leaving without
French
saying goodbye.
Leave. I wonder what Sean Ingle makes of that renovation.
Absolutely. Back to Maxi Kiosko, who says the only Spanish example I can think of is hora inglesa, English time, which means if you give an appointment to somebody, I'll see you at 3 o'clock. And if you say English time, means you'll actually bloody turn up at three, as opposed to whenever you fancy, like some people do, Rafa Honigstein. Hull Palace. That's a game we haven't talked about yet. Hey, Neil Warnock's unbeaten since taking charge. He's got the eagle. Do you know what position they are in the league table? Go on, guess, Barry. Crystal Palace, where might they be? 15th, 16th, do you think?
Oh, ninth.
Ninth is correct. Bingo.
Yeah, and they could well beat Hull. I mean, for all the money they've spent, Hull have only won one game this season on the opening day.
It's because they're playing all this fancy down football now, as opposed to that rock-solid stuff that Seabury's used to do.
Well, I'm kind of... The sort of patterns of his regime at Sunderland there, which started well and then sort of went off a cliff towards the end. And I think he's definitely got better players at his disposal at Hull, but I'd be slightly concerned if I was a Hull fan.
All right, what about Burnley fans? Ian.
I was just going to say, I think Bruce is going to change his formation back to a back three, having changed it to a sort of Liverpool-style diamond to fit in all of his new players, so maybe that will help. But they haven't actually played badly, Hull, this season.
No?
They played all right in every game. They're not getting wins.
Palace have scored three goals in each of their last three away games. That's amazing. I wonder if they'll do that at the KC. I also wonder what's going to happen when Leicester take on Burnley at the King Power Stadium. This is the top two from the Championship last year coming face-to-face.
I suspect Nigel Pearson will look down on another Leicester victory.
All right. Mm-hmm. There you go.
You worry about Burnley. They've nothing up front. Mm-hmm. You know, their play-alone striker is constantly isolated and their defence isn't good enough to cope with what's been thrown at them this season, whereas it was last. And it's difficult to see where they're going to get a goal from, let alone a point.
Isn't it a case of a club where everybody's quite reconciled with the idea of going down? So it's part of a growing phase. Premier League, we're going to put some money aside. We'll come back. We'll be stronger next time. And it's not a big tragedy.
Hmm? Well, that would be a very sensible way of dealing with the season because the parachute payments for the next four seasons now, there's a lot of things Burnley can do with that sort
Absolutely.
Of money.
Hmm.
Nice. All right, then. Sunderland Stoke. Yoo-hoo! Hey, Stoke played on Monday night, and they beat Newcastle. And Alan Pardew's still there. He is still there. Well, as we speak, he's still there. No sign that he's going to go before they travel to Swansea. See what I did there? I've just moved straight past Sunderland Stoke. What about that? Swansea-Newcastle, eh? Oh, go on, Barry.
Swansea will win.
All right, I was going to say Sunderland Stoke. Do you not want to say anything about that?
I'd settle for seeing Sunderland score a goal at the moment.
Right.
I wouldn't predict that they'd beat Stoke or anyone else at the moment.
At the Stadium of Light Relief, as I call it.
It's Newcastle's game against Stoke was quite odd in a number of regards. I think it was pretty much everyone expected Stoke to win, and they did. Jack Colback should have got an equaliser very late in the game. It blazed over the bar from about 3 yards out, the goal gaping. And was apparently distraught in the dressing room afterwards. Alan Pardew walked off, applauded the... Unluckily for him, the tunnel is right at the away end. And he walked off, applauded the fans, and just got jeered. And he looked broken.
The really interesting thing is that Ashley dispatched lawyers after the conversation in a pub that suggested that Pardew only had one game left. So having done that, he can't very well sack him immediately afterwards. I would suspect that he will be in something of a holding pattern, Pardew, now, at least until the only thing that will push Ashley's hand becomes apparent, and that is that Newcastle are going down. Mm. I honestly don't think he'll do anything until he believes that relegation is a serious possibility.
So kind of like spring, something like that.
They will go down if Pardew isn't fired. I mean, he hasn't a clue what he's doing at the moment. He doesn't have any game plan, and they're playing so badly, half the players don't care. And I don't think there's any doubt they'll get relegated if he isn't replaced. But then the question is, who'll take the job?
Well, yeah, it's funny, because usually at this point you'd have about 10 people. You'd have a long list of people being touted in the papers, but who's going to be lined up to take over? But the only name I've seen so far is David Moyes, and you're going to say Felix Magath.
Felix Magath would take the job. I mean, you'd have to be willing to go and work in a club with no real ambition, which will appeal to some managers.
I'll do it.
On this island. But will not appeal to the kind of manager you want.
That's true.
It's not only no ambition, though, you're absolutely right on that, but also very limited power. With power broken into different departments. It's not like you can come in and rebuild the club yourself. And the other problem, as much as Moyes would be a fantastic choice, is that Moyes was earning, I think, about £5 million a year at Manchester United. And Pardew, I believe, is on about £1.5 million. Mm. And Ashley doesn't seem like the kind of man who's going to triple the wage budget for the manager.
Right, OK. I'll move on then. There's three more games to talk about. One is West Ham QPR, big London derby, big heroes welcome awaiting Ari and Rio.
Rio seems rather preoccupied at the moment with hawking his book.
Oh, yeah.
Which appears to be littered with various inaccuracies, which is something he has in common with his manager, who also had a similar book out. But Rio's accused Kick It Out of being useless, the anti-racism campaigners, because he said they didn't give his family support during the race trial between Anton and John Terry.
Right.
And that's not true, because Kick It Out, despite what Rio said, had a representative in the court with Rio's family and Anton's family every day during the trial. And he's now, this morning, complained that they wanted him to wear a T-shirt, but they wouldn't wear T-shirts in court. So he wanted a representative of Kick It Out to go into a court of law during a trial wearing a Kick It Out T-shirt, which just seems bizarre. Maybe one of those silly baseball hats with a big number 5 on it as well. Mm.
All right, well, so there's a book I don't have to read now. Thanks, Barry. Hey, they haven't got a midfield, have they, QPR?
Glenn Hoddle's 3-5-2 will take care of it.
All right.
Don't worry.
What about Mo Poe, as producer Ben insists that we try calling Mauricio Pochettino, who'll be facing his old side Saints, who are doing quite well without him, thank you very much, up in second place, playing brilliantly.
I think Southampton are a brilliant bet to win that game. They're 5-2.
Oh,
they're a better team.
Let's all get on that.
Spurs, I'm not saying they will win it, but I just think that's a price you have to take if you're a punter.
And Spurs have played in the Europa League.
Yeah. Mm. And Spurs aren't very good at the moment, you know, so.
They weren't that bad either.
But Southampton actually seem to have got better. The whole story was that the heart had been ripped out of them and they were going down. They're actually a better team than they were last season.
Mm. Yeah, and for all they're the people who are a bit like Steve Austin after he got rebuilt, man.
They had the technology.
Yeah.
Well, for all the people, you know, making excuses for Liverpool, saying that their players haven't had time to bed in yet, exactly. Southampton's have bedded in perfectly
exactly.
well.
Exactly.
Can I just say one thing about Spurs?
Please.
Because I agree with what Ralph was saying. They're not as bad as people say they were. And in the London derby, I actually thought that they were a bit unlucky to
better finishing.
Yeah, and they would have won.
But those
game.
Are the players they've got to finish. That's the thing. That's why they're not very good. Hmm. Anyway, I think I'm with Barry on that. But what about Sunday lunchtime's massive, massive affair at Old Trafford?
Ooh.
As Man United take on Everton, quite literally the most expensive Premier League strike force ever assembled against the worst defence in all of Europe.
Which is very strange, because when you look at this defence, it's the same which started last season so well. It's still, you know, Baines, Coleman, Jagielka, Distan, well, John Stones has joined the fray now, Tim Howard. It's still, Gareth Barry is still there, not being sent off. And you wonder, well, why? Why? What is going on?
I don't know.
It's very odd. I think Roberto Martinez is asking himself precisely the same question.
Is this going to be another morale-boosting win for Man U, as Everton will have to travel to Krasnodar, which is, I don't know where that, it's in Russia somewhere. Do you know where, Rafa? No. Somewhere out there. And Man U, who Philippe Auclair, when you want to talk about bold predictions, Philippe here,
I tipped them for the title.
For the title.
What title?
Everton.
Exactly.
For the Premier League title. That was before the season started, right. Before the end of the transfer market. And I thought they would get the defenders they needed, and they didn't. Mm. And on the other hand, I am certainly not thinking that Manchester United will finish seventh. I think they'll finish much higher than that.
And how high, Philippe?
In the top four for me, without a doubt.
Without a doubt.
Absolutely without a doubt.
Sans doute. Right.
At the expense of?
Sorry?
At the expense of?
Oh, Liverpool.
Okay. All right.
Comments
well,
they are
they're currently 2 points, only 2 points away from the top four. Yeah. And they are currently, they're 1 point above Liverpool at the moment. So, yeah, they're up in seventh, man.
They've got ridiculous situation with injuries.
Who have? Everton?
Well, not Manchester United.
Oh, Manchester United.
Absolutely ridiculous. It's almost as bad as Arsenal's, which is saying something. And which is, of course, nobody takes that into account. But he has, Van Gaal has not been able to put together a solid defence or a defence that can stay the same from one game to the other. So it's quite logical that it would take time to work out. But going forward, yes, they're absolutely frightening. There you go.
This is the team that threw away a 2-goal lead at Leicester.
Absolutely.
Mm. All right. Man U, Everton?
I don't know. It's difficult to say because Everton looks so underwhelming.
Mm.
They got the draw against Liverpool, but they don't play with any discernible style. I think, again, it's a coach and a team who don't quite yet fit together. And there's always this question, how much can I adjust? And Van Gaal, of course, is asking the same question. How much do I need to adjust to the players that I have? Or can I just be stubborn and see this through, even if it takes 3 or 4 more months before to gel? Everton, to a certain extent, have the time. Unless they're in real trouble going down, they're absolutely fine where they are. United don't have the time.
Right.
So Van Gaal is being, I think, has to think on the fly before he actually works out his grand idea that he always eventually comes up with.
All right, well.
They will miss Herrera. He's a big loss.
Mm.
He was really one of the players that, Van Gaal had every reason to be very satisfied with since the beginning.
All right, well, make sure you don't miss our podcast on Monday when we come back with our reaction to all the extraordinary events that await us in that game and all the other ones we've just talked about. In the meantime, many, many thanks to Philippe, Ian, Barry, Rafa, and producer Ben, and you, friends there. Have a super weekend. We'll see you Monday.
Support for this podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand, or portfolio so easy it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.